show, the John Curley Sherry Elliger show.
I mean, second thoughts about diving in since Dory. No way. Diving in. There we go. All right. By the way, Aaron's going to be coming on the big show, I think, next week, commiserating with my son, Rye. Going to try to get Bones, that's Jay Buhner, to come on as well. The three of them are going to all sit around like sad sacks and talk about the Mariners, what the Mariners can possibly do to turn the season around. All right. Aaron has already agreed. Rye's looking forward to it. So, that's coming up, I think, next week. For anybody that's watched the Mariners, probably most likely get devastated by Houston, and then it's going to just be a very sad, long weekend.
We're all fortunate that Aaron turns his mic off while he moans as he looks at the TV in the studio at the Mariners on every day, basically.
But what I love about Aaron as a Mariners fan, he's like, yeah, I can't give up on those guys. I just can't give up on those guys. I just can't. I can't. So as a new dad, he's, you know, there will be many disappointments, and you never give up on your kid. So he's just a long-suffering Mariners fan. Seattle population, maybe that's why some of these people are moving out. We just talked about that, we had a drop, 0.6% or something like that, of the number of people. This is the first time in a long time since they've been keeping track of this that we had more people moving out than moving in.
Right. The Census Bureau, from July 1 of 20 to July 1 of 2021, Seattle lost 4,300 residents. That's a decline of 0.6%.
Mm-hmm. I saw this piece in the GeekWire. 67% of Seattle residents have considered moving out of the city in a new survey, and they give the reasons as to why. 70% said that Seattle is on the wrong track, 81% indicating the quality of life is worse today than it was 4 years ago. And those that considered moving out, 35% of them say it's because of living and housing costs, 29% public safety, 12% cite homelessness, 9% said government and politics. So you have an exodus. Eventually you get to a certain point where you're living in a city. If it just becomes too hard, too expensive, there's low quality of life because your car keeps getting broken into, and then you're just like, I'm done. And you're going to leave. And it's one of these also weird things that your friends leave, or one person leaves that you know, and then you start to think, I'm going to get at it. Yeah, you know what? Let's move. And if you can go somewhere, you do go somewhere, especially if you're able to, you know, work remotely or just go over to Bellevue, or just someplace that you feel, you know, that you can have a better quality of life because you don't have to worry about all the, you know, the decay of what now has become part of Seattle's landscape.
The population is still high. It's 734,000 people. It's the 18th most populous city in the country. Uh-huh. And some other cities also lost some population. Portland, Denver, Boston, San Francisco, and New York, had the biggest loss of 305,000 people.
You seem pretty upset about that. Is there a reason? It seemed to have struck a nerve there. You okay, Sherry?
Sorry, huh? I was a little choked up. You know how I love New York. please come back. Please come back.
I love New York. I love New York.
All right. It's not fair. But a lot of cities had some gains. Redmond, Linwood. Losses were Seattle, Bellevue, and Federal Way. Those had the biggest losses in population.
Yeah, I saw a cool article talking about how Linwood's going to get ready for it. They say, we get this light rail is going to come in here. How are we going to do this? How are we going to expand? What's Linwood going to look like? It's going to be this big metropolis there in Linwood. It is true that you can drive all the way across Linwood without ever leaving a parking lot. FB from Linwood, appreciate
what?
That joke.
Do that again? What?
It's crazy out there like it. Andrew, a rim shot when I let you know. Okay. Hey, I'll do a comedy. Guys, ever been to Linwood? Linwood's crazy. What a crazy town Linwood is. It's so, I mean, all those, you know, get all those stores and, I mean, everywhere you go, you know, there's Best Buy and everything else. You know, you can drive all the way across Linwood without ever actually leaving a parking lot. Hang on. I'll be here all week trying the veal. All right. It's a Linwood joke. Ray Liotta passes away. Ray Liotta, a 67-year-old actor. You and I have both had the great pleasure of spending time with him. Down to earth, crazy, fun guy. You're talking to him. He's just like, he's not at all like any of the scenes or any of the characters that he plays. He's got the New York accent, and you keep trying to get him to like turn into one of those actors or something. I got him, parked the car, and we drove, we walked down over to a place called Monorail Espresso, which used to be, I guess, up Fifth and down this little, on this one side street up there near, past the Fifth Avenue Theater, right in that area. I can't remember exactly. I used to take all celebrities that would, were unfortunate enough to have to be on EV Magazine. I would take them there, and they had a little Polaroid camera, and they would take a picture of the celebrity and put them up on their little glass wall there at this outside. It's the first espresso stand, the Monorail Espresso stand. And Ray was so flattered to be on the wall, legitimately. He's like, oh, wow, look at these guys. Oh, my, hey, who's that? Is that Anthony Hopkins? I'm like, yeah. He goes, oh, my, this is great. Look at this. Oh, whoa, where are you going to put me? And they're, like, trying to find a place. They got to, like, pull somebody else down and put, no, 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 don't take him down. No, no, no. And it's like, Ray, you deserve a good spot on the wall. So he was an outstanding actor and dies at the age of 67 in his sleep. There's some sort of something whenever they say in their sleep, it's always like, that's nice. But this probably, there's probably no one here, like a tree falling in the woods. There was no one here to hear Ray, you know, grasping for air or grabbing his chest. I'm just assuming. When people say you die in their sleep, do you really just go?
They don't know yet. He was working on a movie called Dangerous Waters in the Dominican Republic. He was with his fiance.
It's a long title. What's the title again?
Dangerous Waters.
In the Dominican Republic.
He was in the Dominican Republic.
Oh, okay, okay.
The name of the movie was Dangerous Waters. Dangerous Waters in the Dominican Republic by starring Ray Liotta. And they don't have a cause of death, but, you know, I assume his fiance was probably with him. When they say you die in your sleep, I think that means you don't wake up.
Well, that's how most people end up dying.
No, I mean, I don't think there's clutching and, you know, I think then if that's were the case, you didn't die in your sleep. I think when you die in your sleep, that means you die while asleep. That would be my interpretation. I want to believe that he didn't suffer. I really liked him. I thought he was a great guy and a great actor.
All right. So what actor is on your list of people you'd like to see suffer before dying? Do you have that list handy? You reach over.
I'd have to think about that for a minute. I'm sure there's a few.
Well, while we were playing this cut from Ray Liotta in Goodfellas.
See, I was cooking dinner that night. I had to start braising the beef, pork butt, and veal shanks for the tomato sauce.
And tomatoes. I'm going to make them all. I'm going to make all this meat.
It was Michael's favorite. I was making ziti with the meat gravy, and I'm planning to roast some peppers over the flames, and I was going to put on some string beans with some olive oil and garlic, and I had some beautiful cutlets that were cut just right that I was going to fry up before dinner just as an appetizer. So I was home for about...
Is this from his cooking show or is this from Goodfellas?
It's from Goodfellas. Yeah. Okay. There's more food in that movie than I remember.
About an hour. Now, my plan was to start the dinner early so Karen and I could unload the guns that Jimmy didn't want and then get the package for Lois to take to Atlanta for her trip later that night.
Who's been carving their initials in the tomato?
No, I kept looking out the window and I saw that the helicopter was gone.
Michael, keep an eye on the sauce, all right? Stay here with your Uncle Michael, all right?
Yeah, a lot of food in there. And then Joe Pesci comes in and hits somebody over the head with a baseball bat because you think I'm funny, like a clown funny?
Mm-hmm. Such a great scene. I love that movie.
What did you love about that movie? It was unbelievably violent.
I know, but it was so great. I loved all the mob movies. I really did. I love The Sopranos. I thought all that stuff was great.
Yeah. It's something about it when you meet a regular New Yorker. Like I met these guys last August, and they were in the garbage business, and they all have accents like that. They're like, you know, what are you doing? And immediately you think, I'm like in a mob movie. But no, you're standing there talking to four guys that just happen to have New York accents.
Right.
But then when you ask them about it, so like, how involves the mob? They don't say anything, but you know what that means, right?
When they go, like that? What does that mean?
I don't know, but when I drove that truck in New York for a guy named, it was Lambie Trucking, and I said to Mr. Lumbo, whose real name is Lumbo, I said, why do you call it Lambie? Your name's Lumbo. Yeah, Lumbo sounds, you know, like mob. I was like, yeah, it does. And he goes, so that's why it's Lambie. Any questions? I'm like, no, I'm good. And then the follow-up would be, you're not like in the mob, are you?
Uh-huh. I'd leave that one alone.
Then he goes, I got some concrete shoes I'd like you to try on. You know, one of those things. That's really tragic. Medium Petey died. All right. Ray gone.
Yeah.
Weren't you surprised by the amount, how bad his skin was?
Yeah, Nicolas Cage is the one I'd want to suffer and die.
Wow, really?
Whoa, wow.
Yes, like, there's so many that have, like, I don't know, actors that have committed actual crimes. Kevin Spacey just got charged with some stuff, and Nicolas Cage is at the top of your list, Jerry?
Yeah, I can't stand
suffer it. And
can't
die?
Well,
how long
you
want him to suffer for?
No,
I know, but I didn't
think
you'd answer. It was a rhetorical, ridiculous question.
Okay. Okay, I take it back. Never mind. I hope he's happy and healthy.
Not really.
And yes, Ray Liotta did have bad skin. Really bad skin.
You could light a blue tip kitchen match off the side of his face. Oh,
really
like a
bad.
Topographical map of Peru. I was surprised. I'm looking at it. I'm like, oof. But you think that, like, if you had skin like that, they'd be like, Ray, I don't think you should be an actor. Like, somebody would have stopped him along the way. But he just kept pounding away, even though he... Oof, wow.
Yeah, but it added to his character. Like he said that in the couple of articles that I've read about him since he died, he really fought being typecast as a crazy guy. He didn't want to do that. He didn't want to be just this, you know, angry, crazy, weird guy. He wanted to be, you know, have some depth to his acting and everything. He was in Field of Dreams. So I think your favorite.
I forgot.
Yeah. I'm Nicolas Cage. And I approve this message.
Oh, by the way,
thank you.
He's still healthy. By the way, when you interviewed him, did you have a sense like I could be friends with this guy? And then do you dare cross over the line and say, "Hey, let me give you my phone number," or "We should get together for a drink," or something like that? Did you have that sense when you were talking to Ray? Because that's how I felt.
He was so soft-spoken and nice. He was such a nice guy. As I was telling you guys before, he's only been married once, so I thought he was married a couple of times, but he had just married his wife, and he was so sweet about and so excited about being married to this woman and just went on and on about how great she was and how much he admired her and loved her. And, yeah, I mean, he was just a regular guy.
Apparently, he was with his fiance or something working on that movie with the long title. So apparently, as sweet as that she was, that he went on to someone else.
Well,
right,
you know, the heart wants what the heart wants. But he would be the kind of guy that you didn't put on airs, that you thought you could hang out with for sure.
Have you ever crossed over that line? I mean, not in a weird, like, you know, all handsy thing that you do, but like just generally, like, I think this celebrity, I'm going to become friends with this person, even though they're way up here and you're way, 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 way down here.
Yeah, I can't think of anybody in particular that's happened with.
I feel like it was Nicolas Cage, right?
Yeah, that was
close to
him.
Right.
Yeah,
so you could kill him.
We had a really bad breakup, that's why. So I've, you know, kind of not, don't really want to talk about it. You know, it was ugly. I don't think so. Because, you know, when you work and you do these interviews and everything, it's fleeting. You know, they're on a thing. So you don't really get to spend a lot of time with them. The only person that I spent some time with was Margaret Cho. After the show, she wanted to go to this museum that was in DC of like oddities, like medical oddities. She really wanted to go to this. So we took her to this medical oddities museum. We hung out and had lunch. She was great. She's really sweet, really nice. But that was the end of it.
Well, you're walking around the museum looking at like weird things in jars. That's not right. Where do you go from there?
Yeah, it was a little bonding experience. I mean, when you're looking at like a severed foot or something like that. But yeah, that's the closest I've come to like, you know, doing something off time or my own time with somebody. How about you?
I can see with Margaret. Margaret over here. Look at the two-headed goat. Malcolm Jerome Warner. Is that his name?
From Cosby
Show.
Yeah.
I've told Jacob this sad story because I never normally, you know, I don't fall for it, but he's like, dude, I'm going to be in town for 2 days. We got to hang out. I'm like, really? Yeah, seriously, man. I'm doing you guys today. And then I got another interview, and then I'm just hanging out for 2 days. We got to hang out. And I'm like, wow, Malcolm Jerome Werther wants to hang out with me.
Call him by the right name, at least.
I just kept Cosby Kid. And he goes, seriously, man, give me your phone number. Give me your digits, whatever he said. And I said, all right, yeah, sure, I'm going to visit you. All right. Because I think, because you normally don't feel weird, like, oh, it's going to become my friend. So I wrote my phone number down on a piece of paper. And he, cool, man, cool. And I handed it to him. And I remember he put it forward on where the makeup table was. The woman was doing, going to put makeup on him. And he put it there. And then after the show, I was all kind of giddy. Like, oh, I'm friends with
Malcolm Jamal Warner to help
thank
you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, thank you. And I go to say to the makeup artist, Linda, I said, how about that? Malcolm, was it again, Jacob?
Jamal Warner.
Yeah, he's my friend. I'm going to go hang out with him. She goes, oh, that's nice. And I look over, and there next to the makeup brushes is my card with my number on it. Linda, did he get a pen and write it down on another piece of paper? Maybe a bigger piece of paper where he could write my new buddy?
Wah, wah. Boy. That's terrible. Oh, bless your heart.
So stupid. But
did you take the card? Did you just like palm the card then so they wouldn't know?
Looked at it. I slowly tore it up into bits. I used it to dab my tears. Oh, my God. So dumb. Oh, where's Nicolas Cage when you need him? Thank you, Sherry. Bucky's Bucky's Auto Service Center, 16 locations, been around for 52 years. They know exactly what they're doing. Take your car over there. And don't forget, even though that engine is complicated, right, Malcolm?
There's so many moving parts to it.
That's right. That's my buddy, Malcolm Schrumwarner, understanding the combustible engine like no one else does. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Right, right, Mickey?
This was deep. I'm sorry. This was wow.
Yeah, that's right. All right. It's nice to have Malcolm hanging out. Thank you, Jacob.
Your best
that.
Friend.
Yes.
Loves you.
Just forgot the card.
Yeah, right. He memorized the number. He had etched it in his, as a tattoo.
Oh, my. Do Republicans and Democrats really hate each other? Not as much as you think, a new study says. A new study that I didn't bother reading.
Okay, well, essentially what it says is that more people are interested in supporting their own political beliefs rather than hurting somebody else's. So they did an experiment, and what they did was they separated hurting the opposing political party monetarily versus helping their own party monetarily. Which would you rather do? And most people were interested in supporting their own political party. They didn't want to spend, you know, they didn't want to do something to hurt the other one. So,
okay.
They say there's no clear evidence of hatred. They hope that this study encourages people from feeding their own hostility in response to exaggerated perceptions of hostility coming from the other side. So part of the issue is that we believe the other side, whoever that is, wherever you stand, your other side is hating you, and so you hate back.
Right, right. I knew you'd read it, so I was trying to find the counter to that. So in 2019, a study was done of Democrats and Republicans, and they said, the question was, if all Republicans were to die, would the world be better off? 20% of Democrats said yes. 15% of Republicans said, yeah, if all Democrats were to die, the world would be better off. 15%. So what has happened is the polls between us, those on the right, those on the left, have actually expanded. We're further away than we were before, right? And this is, we're tribal by nature, but we're driven further and further. And so those on the extremes are further away from the extreme. So the extreme left is now the greater distance from the extreme right. It used to be a little closer. And one of the reasons was in the 1940s, we were actually centrifugal force pulled us together because there were external forces that were pushing us together. Communism and the Allied forces were fighting against the evil Axis and Hitler and everything else. And those forces were driving us closer. The tribes were closer because we had to survive as like two tribes coming together. Now, what's happened is that the thing that's separating us is moral outrage. And the moral outrage is given to us on a daily basis, second by second, thousands of a second, through social media algorithms, which trigger the buttons in your brain to continue to come back to get dopamine hits that are not good for you. It's like junk food. But they know, social media knows, they need to keep you on longer. So they're feeding you stuff to continue to overstimulate you, the part of you that gets morally outraged. And moral outrage is the thing that unites people. So everybody that feels they've been all victimized, so people that are morally outraged, one side and then the other side. And the problem is those two sides are now further apart. But most people are in the middle. But the stuff you see, and if you consume social media, you start to get this feeling, well, I guess to choose sides, so I guess I'm on this side. And the thing's just pumping your brain with all of the protests and everything else to make you morally outraged, because that's the greatest button that they can push. And that's the reason they do this. They started in 2009 with likes and shares. That was the big thing that they started. Then you get more people to look at stuff, so then you make more money.
When you were in college in the 80s.
For 6 weeks.
When you were alive in the 80s.
Yes. For more than 6 weeks, yes.
Did you find there was moral outrage? I don't remember a lot of moral outrage in the 80s and 90s. Do you?
There's so many moving parts to it.
I'll handle that question, Malcolm. Isaac, well, when you're a youngster, you are raging against stuff because you don't really. Yeah, I remember going to some film in New York. It was about GE making the triggers for atomic bombs. And I walked out of there. I was so outraged with these other people I didn't know. And I was like, Reagan, and Reagan hates gays, and Reagan hates this. And, you know, then you hate against Reagan or something. But I don't remember. No, because you weren't faced with it. You just watched the news, and Tom Brokaw and Peter Jennings and Dan Rather, whoever was on there. You weren't getting fed this stuff all the time. So, no, you weren't getting the junk food that was pushing the buttons to be morally outraged. You didn't have that either, right?
No, and I know now, like, friends that have, you know, teenage kids, or even my, you know, I have a couple of godchildren, they're all so politically charged. Like, they have really super strong opinions about things. And I just remember nothing fazed me like that. And I don't know if there were certainly a lot of issues, and there were social ills and all of those things there have been since the beginning of time. I don't know if we just didn't focus on it, if it didn't come into our purview, or if it's because of mostly social media now.
Well, you have it pretty good, right? We made great advances. So now there aren't external forces pushing us together, pulling us together. It's the opposite of centrifugal, I can't remember what the word was, that pulls you apart. So then you get indoctrination from school and then social media, and then you're screaming and yelling at your parents because you're going off to college. You spend $60,000 to send your kid to college, and then they come back and argue with you for 3 weeks. And then you send them back out again. And you're like, oh my God, what am I doing? Yeah. No, we weren't. I didn't care about any of that sort of stuff. In the 80s, I just wanted to learn how to disco dance.
I just wanted to make sure that I get my hair as big as possible.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I could get into Studio 54 and Area. Those are the two big things. Just, oh, please. And I remember this one friend went, hey, are we going out tonight? I was like, because I knew if we went out with this guy, we would not get in. I'm like, I'm a good Catholic. Yes, we're going out tonight. Going out tonight, Steve. We're all going out. Oh,
so you
great.
Didn't Malcolm Jamal Warner him.
No, he's like, oh, great. And he shows up with a members-only jacket. I'm like, no, not that jacket. It's nude color. Oh, you're unsnapping the epaulets. We'll never get in.
He wasn't wearing Zeke Cavricci jeans.
Dalston Polo.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. All right, and like, oh, we didn't get in again. Oh, too bad. Those guys suck. I'm like, yeah, they're horrible, aren't they? The way they only want certain people to get in and not you.
dragging us down again.
Must be the jacket and those jeans. Oh, yeah, here we go. It is John Curley, Sherry Elliger Show, Teeny Tiny Lady, and a pick in the, she's going to be swinging by in just a little bit. She's going to choose that litter of the day. Got that pickle jar. Is she riding on horses today? Because I know she just kind of rolled in yesterday. Looks like somebody opened the door and just kind of kicked her in.
Yeah, we can see. It's, you know, it's a matter of booking her a passenger.
I know. I got to get somebody to take care of it. Sherry sent this out. This was disgusting. I was actually eating cereal when this hit the phone, and I clicked on it because it was from Sherry, and I thought, well, this would be kind of fun. And no, not at all.
Yeah, it's a company, I think it's out of Sweden, and it's called Intima or something like that. What they have is a raspberry-flavored uterus-shaped cereal. And you can't buy this. I know you're disappointed. You have to mail out. It has to be mailed away to get it. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to encourage people to have conversations over breakfast about menstruation. And they're saying that these are not normalized, that there's this stigma and embarrassment and everything around this. And so if you can, you know, it's a teaching moment where it's, you know, got the whole, you know, reproductive thing happening, I guess, on the box. And then they wanted to make a statement. And they wanted to say that, you know, don't be embarrassed to talk about this. And this is a way to start a conversation over breakfast.
We're a business. We're here to make money, but not off of other people's misery.
Yeah, misery, like menstrual cycles. It was funny. When I was reading it, after I read it, I was like, ugh. And then I looked down and I realized I had bought a new thing of tampon tea, which is, it's a tampon that it's got a string on it. Dip it in and make tea. So same sort of thing, I guess.
Yeah. This is called Period Crunch. And it's...
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's just... That's its real name. Not making it up. Joke.
Any young women listening to the show, maybe young girls that don't want it, that would like mom to change the station, mom would be a good time. How do you follow that one up?
Well, you follow it up with talking about Spain.
What are you trying to say? Go ahead.
Is considering a bill that
should young girls be listening to this, Jacob?
Sorry, the little girl that yells the thing is running around. I'm trying to
ring, ring.
Call her. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mom, change the station.
There she is.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. You've been warned. So in Spain, what they're considering doing is a law that would allow women days off for severe menstrual pain. They would need a doctor's diagnosis for this. But they think, again, that this is something. And I've seen a lot of these stories popping up here and there about people having parties for their young daughters when this happens, and the idea of making this so it's not so embarrassing or hidden or anything. But this is, you know, out there in Spain where they're saying, you know, if you can get a doctor's notice, you should be able to get sick leave for this. The opponents say, wait a minute, this is now making menstruation like an illness, and they don't want that to happen and stigmatize women that way. And it could also get to the point where men are going to say, I don't want to hire any women because they can take, you know, time off every single month. And that could be a detriment.
I think I like Tom better.
What's going on here?
Yeah, what is going on here? Thank you.
All right.
It's a period talk with Sherry. It's a podcast that you have. It's 8 hours of it, right? When can we listen to that show?
That's every month for about a week. Tune in.
Mickey, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Quite
Why
all
you
right.
walk in at these times? Okay.